for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
We are back after a pretty lengthy hiatus. Welcome back, everybody. This is the FTN DataCast coming at you with 10 days left before the season. So I think it's actually 9 days now. Just ridiculous time, busy time, and we're here to continue and finish these team previews. We're going to do it in a divisional fashion, though. We have the AFC, entire AFC left, and we're going to break down the entire AFC South here on this podcast today. Adam Pfeiffer, Tyler Lochner with me once again. Tyler, how have you been? It's been, like I said, it's crazy times for, you know, for everyone in general, but especially for us that work in this industry and with football season, because preseason, news, updating stuff, getting tools ready, getting the site ready. But it has been very fun and very exciting.
Oh yeah. I'm pumped for the season. Can't get here soon enough. Once the, you know, I've got like a little bit of a deal with my wife. For me, it's when September and football starts. That's when fall starts. For her, it's when the pumpkin spice lattes come to Starbucks, which just so happens to be tomorrow. We're recording on a Monday night here. So fall's here, football's here. Let's go.
Is that factually, like, is that true? Like, that's tomorrow, Tuesday is the day for that?
For that, according to her. And I doubt she's wrong about it.
So I don't drink coffee, and I probably should start given some of the work I'll be doing for football season at FTN Fantasy. But look, if you are, you know, just now, a lot of people out there are honestly just now realizing, oh crap, my fantasy draft's in, you know, a week, I need to get prepared. Like, you need to sign up at FTN Fantasy. You need to get all the information we have, because like, this podcast, I don't want it to be 2 hours, but I could sit here for an hour of it and talk about all of the great content and tools and stats and rankings we'll have available to FTN Fantasy. I don't know. Like, Tyler, how can I like put this into a quick 30-second pitch without just giving away everything, because I could sit here for 25 minutes?
Yeah, I would just say the simplest is that an FTN Fantasy Platinum subscription gets you literally everything that you need. Draft prep, draft cheat sheets, draft guide, rookie information. So all to prep you for the season. And then in season, all the tools, data articles that you would need, trade value chart, weekly waiver pickups, massive game by game breakdown by Pfeiffer here. Streaming quarterbacks, weekly streaming tight ends, quarterbacks, defenses, rankings from the number one ranker,
pace
of play,
Jeff's wide receiver cornerback matchup chart, the shadow index,
as everything, literally everything. And that's the goal at FTN Network, right? To just be a one-stop shop for everything. I think we've accomplished it. So a lot to be proud of, and there's a lot of excitement. I don't know if you've checked out our Discord. You get access to, Adam, I don't know if you've checked out the Discord, but it's really buzzing this year, mm-hmm. I think more than previous years. So exciting times at FTN, not too late to get an FTN Fantasy subscription. So definitely check that out.
100%. I'm excited. And let's get to the AFC South, the division that I'm actually kind of excited to talk about. I mean, you have the Texans, Colts, Titans, and of course the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, you know, things will be better for them. I want to start with Houston, though. The Houston Texans, Lovie Smith now the head coach, Pep Hamilton the offensive coordinator. The story for Houston last season was really, honestly, the, you know, surprising play of Davis Mills, who will enter his first full season as a starting quarterback. He's obviously not going to be a player we target in fantasy very often outside of occasionally streaming in a super flex format. But I do want to talk about Damian Pierce, because is he reaching Gabriel Davis territory of like,
it's not Gabe Davis territory, but I don't think there's been a player in the last week that has gone up as much as him. Maybe Isaiah Likely in Baltimore, but I don't think, like, you know, Likely is still like a late round, last round pick. Pierce is moving up the ranks, like legitimately moving up the ranks.
Yeah. And for a good reason, right? Like it coincides with the fact that a lot of the running backs he's getting into that same tier of, or just flat out surpassing, they obviously have been falling for a large part of the summer. But like, at the same time, like, everything you want to hear or see from Damian Pierce, you've seen during the preseason. He's looked great. You know, obviously you look at what he did Week one of the preseason, he was good. Week two of the preseason, Lovie Smith said, you know what? We've seen all we've needed to see from Dameon Pierce. We'll give him the night off. And then the final week of the preseason starts with the first team offense. Rex Burkhead did play most of the passing down snaps, but I mean, Pierce looked incredible. His vision, his cutting ability looked great. He scored
a great drive. Yeah,
he scored a touchdown on a goal line carry. Look at his numbers in the preseason, right? 6 yards after contact per attempt. You know, totally sustainable, but like he just looks incredible. And if he can carve out the passing down role, like I think he's a locked in top 25 running back right now. But if he can get the passing game role, which is important because we still expect Houston to be a bad team. And as good as Dameon Pierce has looked, like getting the first and second down carries on a bad team isn't all that valuable. So like if he can surpass Rex Burkhead and get the third down work and get the passing down work, I don't care if the Texans are bad. He can be a top, you know, his ceiling is to be top 15, top 12, because look, we saw from James Robinson a couple years ago who, you know, James Robinson's a good running back, but like he obviously wasn't the prospect in terms of draft pedigree that Dameon Pierce was. He was an elite fantasy running back with Jacksonville, who was a bad offense in that season. So that's what I'm really looking for from Dameon Pierce. Can he consistently carve out a passing down role in this offense? I think a report came out like today or yesterday that they're still like uncertain who the starting running back for week one will be. That's not true. Like we've seen
it's
everything.
Definitely going to be Pierce, but yeah. I do think that it will be a committee, at least to start the year. Marlon Mack is still there. Do I think Pierce is going to be the guy? Yes. But do I think Pierce is going to get like 20 touches in week one? No. I think that is a little bit, I don't think that's realistic because
I think it's possible. But yeah, like week one might be tough. I mean, like
I don't think it happens that early. I think it probably happens later in the season.
No, it definitely will, because Rex Burkhead averaged 17 carries a game from weeks 11 to 18 last season. He was the RB20 in fantasy.
But Burkhead, I don't necessarily think will relinquish that passing down role. That's truly a big key here. And I agree with you that Pierce is still valuable, even if he doesn't get that role.
Yeah.
But
I just think what will separate him from being, okay, he was the RB21 on the end of the season, to being, oh, wow, Dameon Pierce was the RB12, RB11, RB13, is getting that passing down role. Because, again, first and second down carries on a bad team, it's just not that valuable. But it's like from what we saw from that preseason week three game, it looks like he's going to be the goal line back, which is definitely important.
Definitely. Definitely. No, Pierce is exciting. Right now, he's the RB27. He's climbed up the ranks. He's going right behind guys like Edmonds, Pollard, Josh Jacobs. I don't necessarily see his ADP rising too much more. I could see him start to go ahead of like Pollard and Edmonds, who are a little bit more like zero RB targets, not necessarily as settled as the starter. Although I would argue that Edmonds probably is starting to really settle as the starter in Miami. But in terms of Pierce, I do think he ends up finishing in terms of ADP right around RB25. Mm-hmm. But I think that he is a player that is likely to beat that ADP. But he's also an interesting player because you're right. The path to finishing as like RB12 or RB15 is definitely there. But in order to be a smash pick, I think he has to get that. Pierce is not like some smash pick if he finishes as RB20 and you drafted him at RB25. Like,
yeah, that's the difference.
You basically just got return on value, which is fine. Is totally fine. Will he smash it though? I'm not necessarily as convinced as others.
Yeah, and like he's probably going to be like by the end of the summer. Well, I guess it kind of is the end of the summer, but by the end of or by the start of the season, once all fantasy drafts, redraft leagues are kind of done, probably like a late fifth, early sixth round pick. So it's like, whereas he was going, you know, 12th round or so earlier in the summer.
He'll be the fastest ADP riser, I think, of everybody.
Yeah. I think maybe, he already is. Yeah. We're already seeing it. Like,
I think he is too. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
We saw ADP spikes from Isaiah Pacheco for a little bit. And that wasn't even like, as but clear that of a situation out. As Pierce.
Right, but that capped out, and as it should. Pierce,
yeah.
Yeah, I agree. He's a very interesting player, and honestly, his preseason was extremely impressive. So
yeah, he looks like, awesome.
He's a burst.
So. Would you rather have Pierce or Elijah Mitchell?
I would rather have Pierce. I just am not an Elijah Mitchell
same.
Guy.
Yeah, I'm this. Yeah, and then like I think I moved Pierce up to like RB25 at the moment. RB24, RB25 ahead of like Elijah Mitchell, right ahead of Pollard. So in that same tier you kind of mentioned earlier, but I do have him atop of that tier. So
yeah,
I definitely mentioned to see the usage in week one. I expect him to start, but again, it'll be the passing game rule that separates him from being RB24, RB25, RB23 to back end RB1, high end RB2 potential.
You want to briefly touch on the most underrated player in all of fantasy football?
Yeah, we'll talk about Brandon Cooks real quick. I just want to just say Davis Mills last year, like he clearly showed that he's good enough to have Brandon Cooks be a top 20 receiver. Davis Mills, you look at it too, among quarterbacks, at least 100 dropbacks last season, Davis Mills had the fourth best deep completion rate at 45%, and he had a 123.5 passer rating on deep passes. That was the highest rate among all qualified quarterbacks. So he was really good, and Pep Hamilton gets a lot of credit for that. He was the quarterback's coach last year. I mean, Pep Hamilton, we've seen what he's done with quarterbacks, and now he's the offensive coordinator, so I'm really excited about Pep Hamilton. But yeah, Brandon Cooks, once again, like you alluded to, arguably the most underrated player in fantasy football.
Yeah, every year. Cooks is... he's like automatic for 1,000 yards. What do you think? What do you think he'll end with in terms of yardage? Do you think he gets to 1,200?
I think he's like 1,107.
Do you think he gets to 1,200 though? If you had to put money on it, because who else are they throwing to? I was just thinking of this
Brevin earlier. Jordan. Don't sleep. No, but like, so Brandon Cooks is. I agree. He's going to get 1,000 yards, in between 1,000 and 1,200. Like you look at his Brandon Cooks numbers last season alongside Davis Mills, like it didn't matter. He was better with Davis Mills. He played 12 games with Davis Mills, averaged 9 targets, 6.1 receptions, 65.5 receiving yards, and over 15 fantasy points per game. Like I check his ADP like every other day to make sure like it's still the same, and it is. It actually moved up over the last couple weeks from like wide receiver 26 to like wide receiver 24. And I'm like, oh, I have him 7 spots higher than that. He had at least a 25% target share in 7 different games last season. Like he's just as rock solid as it gets. He's had, you mentioned the 1,000 yard mark. He's reached that mark and finished as a top 20 fantasy receiver in 6 of the last 7 seasons.
In the one season he didn't, he was hurt.
Right. Like, now, and this was the question, right? He'd been with Drew Brees, he'd been with Tom Brady, he'd been with, you know, Jared Goff is an average quarterback, but that entire offense was incredible, obviously. He's done it with like an elite offenses and elite situations, and then he comes to Houston, it's like, okay, is this year he finally, you know, doesn't, you know, post these consistent numbers and
and he still produces with Davis Mills. Yeah, yeah. He's so good.
So I have closer to wide receiver 17, 18 than 25, 26. So I'm drafting him very often.
Yeah, I think Cooks is one of the best players you can draft with where he's currently going. Just a good, like you're definitely going to get value from him. He's not going to have like a whole bunch of smash weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But if
he's going to be a lot of those like 6 for 80 and a potential score.
Right. He's like basically guaranteed to finish as a fantasy wide receiver too. And he doesn't cost fantasy wide receiver too. I guess now he does. You said his ADP rose some, but he was for basically this entire summer, he's been going as a wide receiver too. So yeah, draft Cooks. And then I'll just let you finish quickly with a 10 second spiel on Brevin Jordan.
Yeah, he's been my favorite sleeper tight end all offseason. Dwayne McFarland from PFF was tweeting out some really good numbers about Brevin Jordan's preseason usage, how he's pretty much running a route on like 80% of the first team passing plays with Houston. And you look at Pep Hamilton, who's now the offensive coordinator. We've seen tight ends heavily involved in the passing game and his offenses with the Colts back when he was with Stanford. So I am, and like I always talk about it, tight ends going late that you look for as a breakout candidate. I'm looking for talented players who are going to run routes and have a chance to finish second on their team and targets. I think Brevin Jordan fits the bill for all of those. Real quick, the target distribution, wrote about it in my Texans article, but with the Colts, 3 seasons as the offensive coordinator there, Pep Hamilton, the tight ends accounted for 19, 21, and 25% of the team targets. And like, again, they didn't, it's not like they had, there can be sometimes numbers that are skewed like that because, oh, they had Mark Andrews or Travis, like they didn't have an elite tight end those years. They had Kobe Fleener and Jack Doyle and Dwayne Allen. And then in Stanford in 2011, 2012, tight ends accounted for 40 and 45% of the team receptions. So Brevin Jordan, drafting him everywhere, I'm very excited about him. But yeah, the Texans are pretty easy. Like Nico Collins late, sure. He's had a good preseason. But it's really Cooks and now Damian Pierce as the guys that are probably going to be started in most leagues.
Yeah.
But I think Brevin Jordan, if he finishes a top 12 tight end, which isn't that difficult, he's my favorite player going outside the top like 15, 16, 17 tight ends to reach that mark. So, all right, who do you want to talk about next? Colts, Jags,
or... Let's do Colts.
Yeah, I was going to go there anyway, but the Colts, a little bit of new coaching, or a little bit of new coaching staff here. The defensive coordinator, Matt Eberflew, going to Chicago. But they still have Frank Reich, and they have a quarterback upgrade, in my opinion, with Matt Ryan joining the team. They had, you know, add Alec Pierce to receiver. Like, the Colts have been a team for like 3 years in a row now where it's like, oh, they need a second receiver. They have a lot of cap space, and they do nothing. So let's start with Matt Ryan. How much of an impact do you think he'll make for Michael Pittman in this entire offense, and how much of an upgrade is it really from Carson Wentz?
Yeah, I think Ryan is a slight upgrade, but I don't think he's actually that significant of an upgrade. I know Wentz is terrible, but I also... We've talked about Ryan before. He's definitely an upgrade. I don't think he's like a complete unlocker for Michael Pittman, who finished as a solid fantasy wide receiver two last year. I think Pittman finishes as a solid fantasy wide receiver two again this year. I know some people like to push him to like top 12, the 10 to 12 range, so like a tail end wide receiver one. Honestly, his stats last year were really good. 88 receptions, 1,062 yards, 6 touchdowns. I think he finishes basically in that exact same spot. It's hard for me to project Pittman for that much more. Maybe he adds an extra 100 yards. Maybe he adds an extra touchdown. But I think that that's like, I think it's pretty safe to say that Pittman will at least repeat what he did last year. And then sure, you add Matt Ryan. Maybe there's maybe there's room for a little bit of additional production there. But really, this offense is going to flow through Jonathan Taylor. Taylor had 90 red zone attempts last year, 48 goal line attempts, like rushes from inside the five. He's going to get the touchdowns again. So in terms of like an explosive season from Pittman, I just don't see that because I think Taylor's going to gobble up so much of the touchdown opportunity. What's kind of your take on Ryan Pittman?
Yeah, I love Michael Pittman. I got this question a lot on Twitter over the weekend because people were drafting like it was like the, oh, five players that you're trying to draft everywhere you can. Michael Pittman's on that list. So yeah, the numbers were good with Wentz last season, but I think the usage is going to be different and it's going to be better for Michael Pittman this season. Carson Wentz was just throwing 50-50 balls all last year, hoping for Pittman to make a play, which he did very often, or a pass interference penalty, which also happened very often. Michael Pittman had 29 contested targets last year, the eighth most in the league. Nearly 23% of his total targets were contested. Like, this Colts offense is supposed to be predicated. It's a West Coast offense of Frank Reich that is a lot of crossing routes, a lot of timing routes. And that didn't happen as much this year it happened with Philip Rivers 2 years ago, but not with Carson Wentz. He was, you know, we know Carson Wentz holds onto the ball too long, and he was just throwing up jump balls to Michael Pittman. With Matt Ryan there, it's going to be more scheme targets for Michael Pittman, more targets in space. Because remember, Michael Pittman in his rookie season was like he was top 12 in yards after the catch per reception. And he completely fell off that this past season because so many of his targets were deep down the field and in contested situations. So you add that with the fact that he's already seeing, you know, he's already projected to see an insane amount of volume anyway. I mention this stat all the time, but it's one of my favorite stats because we have all the information at FTN Fantasy. But Michael Pittman, he was responsible for 27% of the Colts' total receptions last year. Only Davante Adams and Cooper Kupp had higher rates. So it's like they just didn't throw to anybody else. Now the Colts do have Alec Pierce and Paris Campbell, who right now is healthy. But like Pittman is going to walk into at least a 25% target share. And I think, again, like 85 to 95 receptions is probably in range. Maybe he scores, you know, 6 touchdowns again. Maybe it's closer to 8. But I love Michael Pittman. I love the usage. And we know Matt Ryan has targeted his number one receiver at a ridiculous rate. Yes, he's had Julio Jones, Roddy White, and Calvin Ridley from 2016 to 2020. But his number one receiver has averaged 149 targets per season during that span. So, yeah, Michael Pittman's like a
top 12 receiver for me. That's a good stat. I mean, that's probably the only stat I think that makes Pittman jump a little bit more.
It's a little skewed because he's
He played with Julio. I know. But you mentioned like Pittman will have a 25% market share. I agree. But he also had one last year. 85 to 95 receptions. He had 87 last year. He had 124 targets. Like, it's just hard to project Pittman for more. Like, I don't think he becomes a 30% target share guy. I think he stays in that 25% range. Maybe he goes up to 26, 27%, in which case then he becomes, I think, more of a breakout player. My take on Pittman, I think he's an excellent fantasy wide receiver too. I would not love him as my fantasy wide receiver one. I think the breakout from Pittman happened last year, and I think this year is just as sustained. It's not a bad player. I think I'm just not quite as excited about, I just think last year was the Pittman year. I don't necessarily
think that's totally fair. Like, Pittman's very hyped, and I'm very excited about him too, but maybe I need to understand that it's not like he's going from a 65 catch, 980 yard, five touchdown season,
which is a good thing, right? Because you know it's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a safe pick. I think he's a very safe pick.
Yeah. Do you have any interest in the secondary receivers from this team? Like, Paris Campbell is immensely talented, but he just hasn't been able to stay on the field.
No, I mean,
I was interested, but
I was interested in Paris Campbell, and then he just like threw up goose eggs all preseason. The best we got from him was a couple camp highlights, but we get those from everybody. So there was a brief moment of time where Campbell was on my radar, and he's off now.
Yeah, and then Alec Pierce, 6'3", 208, 4.41 speed. He's going to be a field stretcher, but he's not going to see consistent targets. And an offense that's still going to remain pretty run heavy. We don't have to talk about Jonathan Taylor. He's the 101 or 102. The 102 in leagues are drafting with Tyler. You mentioned it. The goal line work was insane.
Yeah, Taylor's unbelievable.
Do you have any concerns about some of these reports about how, like, Frank Reich's coming out and saying, we don't want Jonathan Taylor to lead the league in rushing attempts. We don't want Jonathan, like... It's easy to say that, but like, he's also your best player. So
I don't think I'm not concerned about it. I will say it's pretty obvious to project him for regression. Like, he ran for 1800 yards. He ran for 18 touchdowns. He caught 40 balls. Like, Jonathan Taylor, it's not like he's a complete goose egg in the passing game. Catching 40 balls is still a lot. So he's a player that had over 2100 total yards last year. Do I think he gets to 2100 again? No. Do I think he's at 1800 or 1750 again? Yeah, I do. And that's still really good. So even some regression, whether it comes through the form of efficiency regression or usage, not used as much, either way, you shave off some of that production, he's still going to be a top three fantasy running back. Like, it's going to happen. He's a very safe first overall pick. I think if you want, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm taking Christian McCaffrey. I never shut up about that, but if you take McCaffrey first or if Taylor's there second, there's no problem. I have no problem taking Taylor. I don't know why anybody would have a problem taking Taylor. If Nyheim Hines wasn't there, Taylor would just be through the roof amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Nyheim Hines is interesting because and Taylor to an extent too, like, he had 40 catches last season, but like, what if he catches a little bit more because Carson Wentz would not check the ball down last season? Matt Ryan was above the league average in check down rate in 2021. Hines is interesting because there's been hype about him this offseason. Frank Reich said that he would draft him on his fantasy team. And we know this team really doesn't have a lot of depth at receiver outside of Michael Pittman. Hines last season played in the slot about 23% of the time, the highest rate among all running backs, played out wide over 13% of the time. Like, what if they just say, you know what? We'll have Phillip Lindsay be our backup running back to Jonathan Taylor. And Hines would obviously get carries if Taylor missed time too. But if we just play Nyheim Hines in the slot at receiver. And maybe that doesn't happen with Paris Campbell healthy, but like, if and when Paris Campbell misses time, like, I think Nyheim Hines with Matt Ryan could be really good. We saw in that hybrid role, Cordell Patterson was targeted a massive rate for Matt Ryan. What if Nyheim Hines is used in a similar way as Cordell Patterson last season? Not in terms of the carries, obviously, because the Falcons didn't have Jonathan Taylor, but Hines is interesting. I think Hines is going to be like, if you're in a pinch every week, you could do a lot worse than starting Hines, but you also want to do it in games where the Colts are underdogs. And I don't know how often they're going to be underdogs. They're a good team. So thoughts on Hines before we move on to the Titans.
I think Hines is, he's fine. I think you kind of know what you're getting with him, which is like that James White type, which can be very profitable. And if If Matt Ryan's checking down the ball a lot more, we'll see Hines. Hines had some designed plays for him at the goal line. I watched, I don't remember where I saw this. It was some clip, I just think, on Twitter from the Colts account, but they were running red zone drills and Nyheim Hines was there and there was a bunch of scripted plays for him. So
he did get all the work in their first preseason game against Buffalo. Jonathan Taylor didn't play.
Yeah.
And he, like, it's not that he was like just used on third down. Like he was getting good. Early down carries, which is kind of interesting. Maybe they do give him the work if Taylor misses time.
He's actually, I think, he won't get the Taylor level work.
No.
Yeah. He would get work. He's a good target. I'm not like excited about him, but I'm also not bummed.
He's in that range where it's like Kenny Gainwell. Like I love, especially in zero RB builds. I love drafting Nyheim Hines, because he'll
get you points and he's got upside.
Will be higher this season.
And he'll have at least one 2-touchdown game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with Matt Ryan. I think he fits with Matt Ryan a lot better than Carson Wentz. So
yeah,
let's move on to the Tennessee Titans. Definitely some changes for this team, not in terms of the coaching staff, but obviously AJ Brown now in Philadelphia, Julio Jones in Tampa Bay. The offseason has been interesting for them in that regard. They add Treylon Burks. Derrick Henry's healthy. Let's start there with Derrick Henry. It feels like in the fantasy community, it's either you're completely out on Derrick Henry or you're not. I understand he's, going to be 29 this season, finally coming off a season where he got hurt, he only played 8 games, but, like, if Derrick Henry falls to the end of the first round, I really have no problem. Like, I think Derrick Henry's still going to be really good.
I logged in. I signed up for a couple more Best Ball Mania drafts. Can't quit it. Yesterday, I had the 9th overall pick, and Henry was there, and I took him. So,
and that's half PPR, by the way, too.
That's half PPR. Yeah. So 8th, 9th, 10th, very happy to take him there. It is hard for me to take him. Like, I'm not drafting him over Eckler, Taylor, McCaffrey.
No.
And then it's a little bit of a toss up for me between like Henry and Cook. And then I was taking Najee ahead of him until we got like the Najee news that apparently he's got like a serious foot injury. So long story short, yeah, Henry is the only concern with him is will his body break down? But Henry's also like, speaking of Henry's body, if you tried to tackle him, like I would probably literally die. So it's not thing.
A lot of people are mentioning his like
just so
missed tackle
different.
Rate. A lot of
he's
people so are mentioning different. His missed tackle rate declining over the past couple seasons. Like that doesn't bother me because like he was forcing missed tackles at such a ridiculous rate. It was bound to come down. And like you look at last season, he missed half the year, still was 10th in the league in carries with 219. No running back averaged more fantasy points per game than Derrick Henry. Like he also was on pace for career highs in receptions and targets before his injury. And now AJ Brown's not there. And now Julio's not there. And I know Julio wasn't great, but like Treylon Burks is not had a good offseason. He's been dealing with injuries and he's been in and out of practices. And like
Henry averaged
5 targets every now and then. And if he gets 40 catches, like you mentioned with Jonathan Taylor, like 40 catches from Derrick Henry, he could be better than McCaffrey. He really could.
Yeah, you're right because and not only that, but Henry, what he brings to the table for fantasy is week winning weeks. I'm going to have more in an article coming later this week on this, but Henry, I think you could legitimately make this case. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's part of some research I'm doing. I think that you can make the case that Henry was a top 15, maybe 20 to play it safe. Fantasy football player in terms of value last year, even though he only played 8 games, in terms of how much he helped your team win in those 8 games, is just astronomical the level of production that he was able to bring. I actually also don't think it's that crazy in terms of his yardage production, even his touchdown production, for it to like regress. Like he was on pace for almost 2,000 rushing yards and 20 rushing touchdowns. Is it like, would it be that weird if Derrick Henry popped for 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns? I'm not saying that's likely to happen.
No one in the NFL is going to carry the ball more than Derrick Henry this season.
It's not going to happen.
I will guarantee you that.
The Titans are literally just going to run him until his body gives up. And so the only question is, will that happen this year? He's 28. He only played like half a year last year. I don't necessarily think it happens. And you mentioned the dip in missed tackles forced. He was still third in evaded tackles last year. So like, okay, yeah, Derrick Henry is making fewer guys in miss as he gets games. A little bit older. But guess what? Yeah, he still finished third most forced missed tackles in half a season. It's crazy.
If I told you, this is an interesting exercise. If I told you right now Derrick Henry played the entire season and caught 45 balls before your draft, where are you ranking him?
45 passes from Derrick Henry.
I don't know how he's not the second overall pick. Now, obviously, that's a huge leap, and I'm not expecting that, and you shouldn't project that. But like, if there's any year where he sees an uptick in receiving work, it's this year. It's just, they got to play him on third down.
I think if Henry caught like 45 to 50 passes, I would still draft McCaffrey first because, I live the CMC life, but I think you could very easily make the case for Henry.
No, obviously, fun exercise. He's odds are he doesn't catch 45. Odds are he doesn't catch 40.
Yeah, but odds are his rushing yardage and touchdown is right there with Jonathan Taylor. So the only thing really separating Taylor from Henry is receiving work.
Also, I'm kind of being facetious, but I'm also not. He's probably going to throw a touchdown this year because they always have one game where
100%.
He takes a direct snap out of Wildcat and then does like a pop pass in the end zone. So there's 6 points you can just lock in from Derrick Henry. But all jokes aside,
he's a top five fantasy running back.
I think he's still a first round player pretty easily if he goes, if he falls past there's a lot of drafts where I do take receiver in the first round, but like, in any draft where, especially an underdog, where like I love to draft like Stephon Diggs in like the 8 to 10 range, 8 to 11 range, if he's not there and Derrick Henry's there, I don't hesitate. So, Derrick Henry should be really good. He's going to be one of the most involved players in football. Ryan Tannehill, like weird pass season. I know, but like was literally like the most efficient quarterback in the NFL from 2019 to 2020.
Yeah.
Third and second in fantasy points per dropback during that span last year.
It was an illusion,
dude. Yeah, it was weird because like a lot of that was obviously AJ Brown
actually
making
good
crazy plays after the catch.
He had 33 touchdowns against just 7 interceptions in 2020. It's wild that, and we knew who Tannehill was at that point. I will say this, Tannehill scores a lot of points rushing.
He's had 7 touchdowns rushing each of the last 2 seasons. That's actually a huge part of their offense because teams are so... That's why I'm not so quick to kind of,
He technically finished as a top 12 fantasy quarterback last year.
Very quietly. Like, he didn't have a great statistical season, but yeah, those 7 rushing touchdowns change everything. Like, I think he's going to score 4 to 6 again on the ground. It really comes just down to, like, he's obviously going to be outside the top 20 players at quarterback and passing attempts.
No AJ Brown. And I can see a world, I'm not predicting this, but I can see a world in which Tannehill struggles. Maybe Derrick Henry's not rushing for 125 yards a game and they bench Tannehill for Malik Willis. Like, I could see it happening.
Maybe. I just don't think, Tannehill is going to be bad to the point of benching. And like, the talent on this team, it's obviously not as much as it's been, and the AFC is loaded. Like they were first in the AFC last year. Like that was kind of a mirage to begin with, but like they're not even a top 5 team in the AFC right now, in my opinion. But they're still good enough to be a team that's not going to be like 3-9 at one point, and then the Titans are kind of deciding what they should do. So Tannehill's in that range of like after Fields, Cousins, Carr, Rodgers, to where it's like you're not starting as a QB1, but he's like a high end QB2 in Superflex. Especially with that, like those rushing touchdowns, they're designed. It's not like some of them are scrambles, but like a lot of them are play action of Derrick Henry. Everybody sells out to stop Derrick Henry and Tannehill walks in the end zone. So
yeah, you're playing for the rushing touchdown weeks. If he has a week where he has 30 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown, that's 9 points. Just right there, fantasy points. So I think Tannehill outperforms his ADP. Right now, his ADP is QB25, which is just really, really low. I think he finishes like QB18.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think he finishes top 12 again. He's been top 12 back-to-back years. If you go back to 2019 for the second half of the year, he was top 12 for that second half of the year as well. But again, these are all with AJ Brown Julio Jones last year, just different, just a different offense. It just, it seems like the Titans are just funneling everything into Derrick Henry and defense, and then Tannehill just being a game manager.
Well, let's close it out with the passing game. Robert Woods comes in. Treylon Burks comes in. Robert Woods, my opinion, right there as the most underrated wide receiver in the NFL. Coming off the torn ACL, but he's apparently been looking fantastic. He's on track. He's going to play week one. And given the fact that, like, Treylon Burks has had an up and down offseason, Robert Woods, I mean, you look at last season with the Rams alongside Cooper Kupp, who saw more targets than anybody. Robert Woods had a 22% target share last year with the Rams. Like, he could get at least that with the Titans. Again, it's not a pass-heavy offense, but Robert Woods, a top 10-15 receiver in fantasy before tearing his ACL last season. Will he be top 15 in this offense? I don't think so. But, like, he's going pretty late, too, where it's like, I think he's going to outperform his ADP simply because, like, I think he's going to get the ball a lot. He's going to see around a 22 to 24% target share, in my opinion, at least to start the season. Is he going to have a ton of week winning ceiling games? No. And I'm interested to see if Mike Vrabel and the Titans and Todd Downing use him in the running game like the Rams did. That'll be interesting to see. But what are your thoughts on Woods and Treylon Burks, who, again, Treylon Burks, the second he was drafted, it was like, okay, he could be the number one rookie receiver in fantasy given the volume he could see. But he's been, you know, he scored the touchdown in the last preseason game and left with an injury. It's just been a really up and down offseason for him.
Yeah. What I really want to like Woods. I really do. He's so cheap. He's like wide receiver 50. But he's the second wide receiver in a really low volume passing offense.
Second wide receiver?
I think Burks is going to be the number one guy. I don't know. Do you think it's going to be Woods?
I think it's Woods for the time being, absolutely.
I guess we'll see. Maybe it'll be like a fit. Maybe it'll be like an even 50-50 split. It's hard to project either guy for over 100 targets, which then just makes it difficult to get too excited about them. I agree with you. I think they both outperform ADP.
I think Woods is like, he's a fine value. He'll have a lot of weeks where you can plug him in as a wide receiver 3 or a flex. But like, are you...
Burks' range of outcome is just so huge because the Titans spent such significant draft capital on him. I will never in a million years understand why they traded A.J. Brown. Like, makes zero sense to me.
I mean, they offered him, what, $16 million, and A.J. Brown didn't think that was enough.
I guess he just didn't want to play on the Titans. I don't know. Long story short, Burks' best case scenario is that he's A.J. Brown, right?
There was obvious comps compared... Like, they... Similar. There's definitely similarities between the two. The difference is like Treylon Burks at Arkansas. Like, he was scheme touches at all times. He was 13th in college football in screen yards.
Yeah, he's 16 not after the as
catch. He's not as refined as AJ Brown.
And then Burks has struggled in the preseason. Things have not been very positive about him. It's a very, very volatile situation, which does create the opportunity for Burks to be extremely cheap and then pay off in a big way. I do think Burks, I certainly think the intention is for him to be the wide receiver one.
Yes.
So if he's playing decently, even just like decently, I think he gets wide receiver one volume. I think if he's the wide receiver two, like sharing that with Robert Woods beyond like September, then I think it's a big red flag. Like Burks, even as a rookie, should be the guy. So I think the first few weeks will be pretty telling with him and what they're planning on doing. But on the whole, I have not drafted a lot of Titans wide receivers. I have not drafted a lot of Burks, even though I think that the upside potential is there. I think like him just being a complete bust is also on the radar. And I'm not saying like a bust in terms of first round draft, whatever. I'm talking about 2022 fantasy football. I think it's very possible that that does not end up being the case. I think it's very possible that it does end up being the case that he's just like completely useless for fantasy football this year. It makes me nervous. I don't know what to do. Honestly, I wish I had better advice here because I don't know what to do with the Titans passing offense. Whenever I think of the Titans, just like everybody else, I just envision Derrick Henry touching the ball 30 times a game.
The problem is AJ Brown has been one of the most efficient wide receivers in the NFL since he's entered the season, since he's entered the league.
AJ Brown did incredible things with like 7 targets a game.
I think he averaged 6.8 targets per game, but he was like 6th, 5th, and like 3rd in fantasy points per target or route run or snap, one of the two. And it's just like, if AJ Brown wasn't so good at football, newsflash, if he wasn't so good, he wouldn't be posting these up. But like, my point is like, Woods, Burks, anybody in this Titans offense at receiver is not going to be as efficient as
if they're not that AJ Brown. And then the low volume will kill them. Like, right. I can absolutely see both Burks and Woods finishing outside the top 40 at wide receiver. Like, I could see the Titans having 0 weekly fantasy wide receivers.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. And if that's the case and Derrick Henry's healthy, then Derrick Henry is going to be, incredible. Right. Let's close out with Austin Hooper, who I think also falls into that range of late tight ends who have a chance to run a ton of routes and be second on their team in targets. The Titans offenses have been tight end heavy over the past couple of seasons. You remember Arthur Smith was originally the Titans tight ends coach. Then he was the offensive coordinator. And during his final 2 seasons as the offensive coordinator with the Titans, the tight end position saw 27 and 29% of the team targets. And then last year was Todd Downing's first season as the team's offensive coordinator. He was a tight ends coach while Arthur Smith was the offensive coordinator, and tight ends saw 26% of the targets. So there's a nice kind of, comfortability with the tight end position in this offense. Austin Hooper is clearly the starter, and he's not playing with 2 other tight ends like he did in Cleveland. So he has a chance to be, not exciting, but a late round tight end that can get, tight end 11, 12 type finishes. But again, not a ton of upside, but I think he's in that range of tight ends that I mentioned that have a chance to be second on their team in targets. Any thoughts on Hooper before we close out with Jacksonville? Didn't think so. Jacksonville Jaguars, new look team here. Doug Peterson taking over as the head coach. Trevor Lawrence getting some new players around him, right? They bring in Christian Kirk. They bring in Zay Jones. They bring in Evan Ingram. They bring in Brandon Scherff on the offensive line. And good thing we recorded this today because Laviska Shenault has been traded. He's now with the Carolina Panthers. And obviously, of course, maybe the most important aspect, Travis Etienne is back. He will play in the NFL after missing his entire rookie season with a foot injury last season. Can Trevor Lawrence be, because you look at all the rookie quarterbacks from last season, right, for fantasy, the two most hyped are clearly Trey Lance and Justin Fields, who are both top 13, 14 tight ends in most people's rankings. But like, Trevor Lawrence was still one of the best quarterback prospects we've seen in a while. He had an awful rookie season, which happens to a lot of rookie quarterbacks. Of course, Peyton Manning is the obvious comparison. He was in an awful situation last year, but like, are we sleeping on the fact that Trevor Lawrence could just be really good at football still and has a much better situation around him? Doug Peterson being a former quarterback in the NFL, we saw what he did with Carson Wentz. We saw what he did with Nick Foles. Like, are we just sleeping on the fact that Trevor Lawrence could be really good in year 2?
First of all, I left myself muted for the Austin Hooper comment.
Well, it worked out perfect.
Which was fine. For Lawrence, yeah, I mean, we could be. He was, in terms of QB hype, he was the most hype since Andrew Luck, right? I mean, yeah. Pretty handily. His supporting cast is so bad, though. Like, Christian Kirk, 0 excitement.
You better be careful with the next
Zay
thing
Jones,
about to say.
0 excitement for
you better be
for
careful
there.
With what you're about to say.
Wide receiver 3 in Jacksonville, Jamal Agnew. Whoa. Oh, wait. Whoa. Hold on. I missed somebody here. Oh, Marvin Jones. Obviously, Jones is fine. Look, I just don't think the Jaguars have set up Lawrence for success, which is my concern. They completely burned his rookie year. I think they've done a reset here, which is exciting, but like, I want to see a reset like the Jets gave Zach Wilson, like good, young, exciting first round or early second round fantasy, like wide receivers. So I do not have a lot of excitement for Lawrence. I do think that, to answer your question directly, yeah, I do think that it's very possible that I'm just underrating the fact that maybe Lawrence is that generational player we thought he was going to be. Those types of quarterbacks can elevate their players around them and their situation, and they thrive and whatever. Like, Tom Brady was amazing for forever in New England. he had Gronk, but his number one wide receiver forever was Julian Edelman. And then they would cycle through like horrible wide receivers. I don't
Randy,
want that.
Randy Moss, sorry.
Randy Moss, yeah, for 1 year. my point is, I don't want that to be the case with Lawrence. Like, I just want him to, like, like with Josh Allen, they gave him Stephon Diggs, right? Like, I want that to happen with Lawrence. It's not happening this year, so I just have to live with it. That's my biggest concern with him is, like, does he need that help based on last year? Yes. Does he have that help? No. And the pressure is a big one. Like, how much can the Jaguars protect him? He completed fewer than 40% of his passes when under pressure last year. Like, that's really, 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 really bad.
Yeah, it was an awful season. He did not play well, but was also in a bad situation. I think both things can be true. Here's why I'm really getting more and more excited about Trevor Lawrence. I think Doug Peterson is a fantastic head coach, fantastic play caller, especially for a quarterback and a young quarterback, right? What did we see Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne do at Clemson? What was the style of that offense? It was a lot of RPOs. They're very comfortable with the RPO at Clemson. Etienne and Trevor Lawrence ran it really well and ran it a ton. That has been a staple in Doug Peterson's offenses with the Philadelphia Eagles. So if he's bringing that element to this offense, I think it's going to add more comfortability for Lawrence, especially now that he has Travis Etienne for a full season with him. Just, you know, having Etienne either out of the backfield or lining up as a really reliable target. It's a West Coast offense that's going to be a lot of, you know, easy completions for Lawrence. And I just think with that RPO system, like you look at last season, Trevor Lawrence, or you look at Carson Wentz when he's with Doug Peterson. 2019, he was 6th in RPO plays. 2018 was 4th and 3rd in RPO plays and pass attempts. Like, that's Trevor Lawrence is going to be in that system a lot more, and I think he's going to do really well in it. Now, is he going to be, you know, a top 10 quarterback? I don't know, because like you said, like, I love Marvin Jones, but he's 32 years old, and he's just, you know, he's not somebody that just, you know, he's not a guy that gets into separation. He makes great contested plays down the field. Zay Jones, kind of in the same mold. He'll make a ton of great plays on the field. And Christian Kirk, good receiver. Should he be your team's number one? No. But, like, the combination of Etienne, Kirk, Marvin, and Zay Jones, like, I think it's enough for Trevor Lawrence to take a huge step forward in year two. The question is, like, is it enough to warrant, you know, him finishing as a top 12 quarterback? I just think the position's too deep. But Trevor Lawrence is also quietly 5th among all quarterbacks in rushing attempts last year, too. So,
that's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, that's
definitely
that's
part of his game.
That potential's there for sure.
How would you rank, because I have like Fields, Cousins, Carr, Rodgers all comfortably ahead of Lawrence, but I think he's right after that for me. Like, I think he's next up. I have to go back and look at my rankings, but I think it's like Lawrence around QB 15. Like among the quarterback twos, like is he the top QB two for you, Trevor Lawrence?
Among the QB2s, is he the top QB2?
Because for me, like all the quarterback one,
you're not counting like Kirk Cousins there, are you?
No, for me, Cousins, Carr, Fields, and Rodgers are like the cutoffs of like viable QB1s for me. At least for me, like I would be comfortable with those quarterbacks as my QB1.
Yeah, I agree with that. So,
and then obviously Lance, who I mentioned earlier,
I would take Fields over Lawrence.
So would I.
But I would take Lawrence over Tua or
that's Jameis, that's the exact
Matt
question
Ryan,
I was going to ask
Daniel
you.
Jones, yeah.
Literally, Jameis and Tua were my next two questions. So, yep.
Lawrence over both of them.
Yeah. If I knew Jameis was going to throw the ball more, I would much rather have Jameis.
Agreed. But he might finish with the fewest pass attempts in the whole league.
Yeah, which is weird. I think Lawrence, I'm really excited to watch him with Doug Peterson and with an upgraded offensive line, and especially like Etienne. We can't talk about that enough. So let's transition right to Travis Etienne. James Robinson looks like he's going to play week one. He's been getting a lot of the goal line work in practice. Like for me, like Travis Etienne has been going like the middle of the third round a lot in drafts all summer. That was kind of under the assumption that you understood the upside anyway and knowing James Robinson was going to play at some point anyway. How do you view this backfield with Robinson, who is a good player, and then Etienne, who haven't seen play yet, but we understand the explosiveness and the ability he can provide in the passing game?
Yeah, I love drafting ETN, and I am honestly drafting him like as if James Robinson is going to be a backup, and that's probably wrong. But I just see ETN in a three down role. And I think even if Robinson is there in the backfield, I think ETN is probably still on the field half the time, at least, as a receiver. So I really like him in the offense. I think the fact that he, I think he catches over 50 balls, and maybe like 400 receiving yards is about where I have him projected. So just that role alone is valuable. And then like worst case scenario, if he splits the rushing work with James Robinson, what does he end with? 600 rushing yards. So I think ETN is a very safe tail end RB2 with his receiving work and then like what you would consider the bare minimum of rushing work, with upside, like legitimate upside, to be like a top six or top seven fantasy running back. Because what if he does get the three down role? What if James Robinson is just the backup, especially coming off his injury? I think it's possible. I'm very bullish on ETN with his, with just purely based on his skill set and his draft capital. So love drafting ETN. And then I'm drafting zero James Robinson. Maybe that's a huge mistake, but I, like I said, I think ETN ends up just being the guy.
Yeah. And if like, if you're so convinced that ETN is, you know, getting most of the work, drafting James Robinson doesn't make a lot of sense. Like I mentioned, though, I've been kind of hammering it home, but I do love the RPO element that I think Peterson's going to add, and that benefits ETN as well, because he was in that same style of offense with Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. There's legitimate 60-70 catch upside with ETN. Trevor Lawrence actually checked the ball down 11% of the time last year. It was one of the highest rates in the NFL. And like, we need to see more of the situations where it's like, yes, this team has two good running backs, but kind of like what I think Dallas needs to do more of, play Robinson and ETN on the field together. You're allowed to do that. It's okay. I promise. Especially when ETN's such a good receiver. So I think ETN's upside is to be like a top 15 running back. If Robinson misses time, the upside's obviously a lot higher. And then like Robinson's fine at this point. Like it looks like he's going to play week one, but we have to wonder about the effectiveness. We just saw Cam Akers come back from his torn Achilles and was not effective at all. He had no explosiveness. We'll see what James Robinson looks like. He tore his Achilles late last season. It's just kind of crazy how he's even going to be back for week one. So I'm interested to see what the usage looks like at the running back position, especially with goal line work. Like I think Robinson will have the edge, but ETN, like we know like how valuable receptions can be at running back in fantasy, and ETN has a path to like 60, 65 receptions. So
yeah.
Wide receiver Christian Kirk reset the wide receiver market with a 4-year, $72 million deal.
Christian Kirk resets the wide. Oh my gosh.
It's true. It happened.
I know. I just like that was the weirdest. That was the worst headline of all time.
So he obviously had a huge bump last season when DeAndre Hopkins was injured. He was the wide receiver 25 in fantasy from week 9 on last season. Again, most of those games came with Hopkins out. Primarily played out of the slot in Arizona about 79% of the time. Probably going to play in the slot in Jacksonville because Marvin Jones and Zay Jones will play on the perimeter. You know, I do expect a second year leap from Lawrence. And if that happens, one of these receivers has to be great. Marvin Jones can't be the best value in fantasy football for 10 years in a row. Maybe he can. Thoughts on Christian Kirk and the rest of his past? I think Kirk's an okay wide receiver three if you wait on wide receiver. My problem is where he ends up going in drafts, I already have three wide receivers more often than not, at least.
Yeah, I don't know if I've drafted Christian Kirk once. I consider him the worst pick of round 7. I wrote an article.
So you're not a fan of Christian Kirk then, huh?
No. I'll draft him if he falls to like round 9, mm-hmm. round 10, which won't happen. But yeah, I wrote up an article, worst fantasy picks by round. Round 7, the worst pick is Christian Kirk. I have him ranked 106th overall, and his ADP is 81st overall. So like two full rounds. So yeah, I would draft him. I would draft him in the 9th round. I don't think he's a bad player. He had this was a good stat that I found on Christian Kirk, was among players who I considered a deep threat, so average depth of target over 11 yards, and among deep threats who had at least 70 targets last year. Only Ja'Marr Chase was better than Christian Kirk at turning air yards into actual yards. So a good fantasy wide receiver, or a good wide receiver, honestly, like, I think Kirk is good. I don't think he's good enough to spend a seventh round fantasy pick on. I think you're wasting your fantasy pick if you draft Kirk there.
There is not a single person in the fantasy football community that loves Marvin Jones more than me. But I haven't drafted him a lot just because, like, again, like, wide receiver, like, I'm there's a lot of receivers I like in the rounds leading up to Marvin Jones. But also where he goes is where I'm finally starting to take some running backs. But Marvin Jones, like, he could easily lead this team in touchdowns. We saw him as the clear focal point of the offense in the passing game in general, but especially in the red zone. Marvin Jones, third in the entire league last year with 15 end zone targets. He had 46% of the team's end zone targets. Only one player in football had a higher rate. That was Hunter Henry. So he's 32 years old, but, like, I think he still has a path to, like, 7-8 targets. He's a receiver you can draft at the end of your rounds. You know, maybe he's on your bench and you can start, you know, when with bye weeks, and he'll have opportunities to score touchdowns. But just, you know, incredible football player. Incredible.
Man,
incredible.
It really stinks to hear you sound so dejected about a Marvin Jones tank.
It's just like when you, I've talked about him for like 7 years in a row now. It's just like, everybody knows at this point, I love Marvin Jones. Like, he's amazing. And I hope he's going to have, you know, he's always due for a week where he scores three touchdowns and breaks a slate. So there's that to look forward to as well. But Zay Jones has actually been impressing in camp. He's developed a nice rapport with Trevor Lawrence. Zay Jones is actually really quietly good last season with the Raiders. Now, is he going to be a consistent starter in fantasy? I don't think so. But best ball, he's like someone I've definitely been targeting the last couple rounds in best ball drafts. Thoughts on the rest of the receivers? And I guess we'll close out with tight end two, Evan Engram, Dan Arnold. You know, 12 personnel has been a staple of Doug Peterson's offenses. We've seen the tight end position target share north of 30% in two of Peterson's last three seasons in Philadelphia. Again, a little bit skewed because they had one of the better tight ends in football in Zach Ertz. And then when Ertz was either out or on the same field as him, it was Dallas Goedert, who's one of the better tight ends in football now.
I do not have a lot of thoughts on the wide receivers, so I'll kind of let you just sit there with your Marvin Jones take. I think that Evan Engram is like potential sneaky to be like a top 15 tight end. It's a former first round pick, obviously has never played like one, but does have good athletic profile. The Jaguars, a completely different team this year, so it's tough to use too much from their 2021 data, but James O'Shaughnessy was a fantasy tight end one or tight end two in 75% of his healthy games last year.
Dan Arnold was good too. Dan Arnold is good. That's what I'm worried about with Engram. Like,
that's fair. I mean, Arnold, I consider him like kind of like a slot wide receiver though, less than a tight end. So I could see them both on the field at the same time.
He was 10th among tight ends in yards per target and 8th in yards after the catch per reception last season.
After joining the team, he finished as a top 12 fantasy tight end in three of his first six games. So, like, the path to being a fantasy relevant tight end is there in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's leading tight end last year averaged between 6 to 8 targets per game. So, like, that's kind of significant volume. Really,
and that was an offense that's not even as tight end friendly as Doug Peterson's.
Right. Really, the only question is, do Arnold and Engram like full split work? Because if they do, then they're both like tight end 20 and worse. I think if either one of them like wins the job or becomes the primary target, I think it's very, very safe to bet on one of them to be the top 15, or a top 15 fantasy tight end. So yeah, I think good picks at the end of like best ball drafts.
Yeah, especially like in drafts and on teams where you're going to draft three tight ends, like perfect. And I do love the you know, I think it's a very, it's an offense that's conducive to tight end success. So like, I think if Engram or Arnold get consistent playing time and snaps and routes, they can be really, really, really underrated for fantasy in this offense. But that will do it for the AFC South. Tyler, who wins the division? Colts? I think Colts are the chalk.
Probably, I'm going to say the Titans. I just think Mike Vrabel is a really good coach. I'll zig a little bit there.
Frank Reich is a great coach, but the Titans do have, in my opinion, the best coach in the division. And that it definitely, and like Matt Ryan, I think is the best quarterback in the division, but it's not like an AFC East type of gap where Josh Allen's the best quarterback in the division by like a million. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So I do think it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be the Colts, you know, by 4, 5, 6 games, but I do like the Colts roster. But their depth is not that great. So if they deal with injuries, which they're actually dealing with right now, that could change a lot. We'll continue the rest of these AFC divisional previews the rest of the week. Tyler, anything you want to plug at FTN Fantasy going on this week, though, before we get ready? Again, man, like next Thursday, Bills and Rams on television.
I've got some exciting research. I'm not going to reveal too much because I'm still tweaking it a little bit, but I got exciting research dropping on Thursday and Friday this week. So please be there to check it out.
And Tuesday, you're listening to this today on Tuesday, I will have released my final coaching and coordinator article, the Kansas City Chiefs. So that'll be the last one. That's been a fun project. And then from then on, it's just dialing in on week one. It's very exciting stuff. So keep it locked at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets. Subscribe, rate, and review the FTN Datacast on Apple, you know, podcast, Spotify, anything, any platform to listen to podcasts on. And we'll be back later this week to continue breaking down the AFC, AFC East, AFC West, and AFC North. For Tyler, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. Glad to be back. Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the FTN Datacast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at @APfeiffer24 and @LochnerNFL.